The reason for this delay is that man's mental process is slow, and a new discovery is only accepted finally after repeated demonstration. It is an axiom in physics that matter only acts on matter, so if mind acts on matter, mind itself must be matter. One experiences great difficulty in approaching a fact so new, there is difficulty in finding words with which to express the proposition in simple language. Words are as limited as knowledge on the subject, so when we go beyond the beaten path, we must give new meaning to old words or invent new ones. Matter, as that term has been heretofore understood, is confined substantially to things tangible and physical. This is too limited a use, for if the universe is material, matter does not cease to be when it ceases to be tangible. I would put the facts in this way: A. Matter slow in action is subject to the law of gravitation, and therefore physical. B. Matter so rapid in vibration as not to be subject to the law of gravitation is etheric. Matter when it ceases to be physical is only changed in density. Certain forms of matter may be changed by chemical action and advanced to the spiritual state, then by the reduction of atomic motion the same matter may be restored again to its former condition, to hold once more physical expression. Mind is matter raised to its highest degree of atomic activity when it holds within itself inherent power of intelligent direction. Every atom, every electron and molecule has form, and when those atoms, electrons, and molecules, by attraction, are so closely drawn together as to become tangible, they still have individual form. When by nature's process they are advanced step by step until they become etheric, they still have form. The mind which is etheric has form, is substance, it is real, and its creations take definite shape. Mind acts on matter, as we use their homely phrase, that is to say, matter raised to its highest degree of activity utilizes the tangible substances necessary to give physical expression. This is demonstrated in each individual, for the mind directs the body, and the physical body obeys the will of the spirit. When the statement is made that life continues beyond the grave, the average thinking man doubts it. When the suggestion is put forth that we have now and here a spirit body, which in dissolution only separates from the physical, the assertion is not understood. When the statement is put forth that there is continuity of this life, and that spirit people have bodies, live in a material universe, and have homes similar to our own, the words mean nothing to the average person, for such conditions are beyond comprehension. In order that these propositions may be understood, it is necessary to explain the conditions which make such a state possible. We must know the law through which life holds continuity. Therefore, a just and true comprehension of the following facts is essential. There is a material universe beyond the physical, there is an etheric universe within and outside the physical, and the entire universe is composed of matter in different states of vibration or modes of motion. These truths must be understood before a single individual can comprehend the continuity of life, that the so-called dead have bodies, form, feature, and expression, and that they live on intelligently in a world as material as this, continuing their progression. Everything that possesses the property of gravitation or attraction is classed as matter. That is the most scientific definition of matter given by people in the world beyond this. Matter is either solid, liquid, or gaseous. If solid, it is strongly cohesive. If liquid, less so. If gaseous, the atoms may be said to bump against each other and rebound. Molecules are made up of several atoms. For instance, a molecule of water is composed of three atoms, two of hydrogen and one of oxygen. Atoms are smaller particles of matter, possessed of forces so wonderful that it is utterly impossible to trace them down and examine them, for the reason that they are continually changing, so rapid is their passage through the atmosphere. There is much the scientists do not know about atoms. About 200 miles above this Earth plane extends what we call atmosphere, at which distance it becomes very rare. What then extends throughout the universe, throughout the solar system, throughout all solar systems? There exists something which is not like the Earth's atmosphere, which is called ether, through which, with vibrating undulating motion, come waves of light, ultimately reaching the Earth plane, giving not only light but life. These countless atoms are in constant motion, passing through the ether, with wave-like undulatory motion, having perfect form, with individual likes and dislikes. They have intelligence, are drawn together, or there is no affinity, for through affinity there is cohesion. Cohesion among the atoms, when slow, becomes physical and visible. That cohesion may be among etheric atoms, where the vibration of the mass is so rapid that it has to us no visibility. The cohesion of atoms is not confined to the physical world, for, through the universal law, these atoms find expression not only in but beyond the physical. The two planes of consciousness are closely interwoven. The same law that governs and controls and directs the one, governs and controls and directs the other. It is only, therefore, through the law that we are able to advance out of the physical. Every atom has force, and force wherever found or however expressed is life, and every atom has heat, heat so intense that all the furnaces of this earth could not reproduce it. This ether, this subtle substance permeates all things physical. One of the great impediments to our realization of spirit presence and activity is our inability to conceive force and matter in their more refined forms not manifest to the physical senses or susceptible to touch or vision. Yet all the greatest forces are unseen. Electricity, magnetism, and steam are only cognizable to our vision by their occasional manifestation of light and color, or through the vapor produced by the latter when it meets with the atmosphere. Changing the vibratory condition or density of water by heat illustrates in a simple way the proposition herein stated. You take a basin of water and put a fire under it, it commences to bubble, its motion increases, its vibration is raised, it changes to steam. By confining that steam, and applying more heat, superheated steam, which in itself is invisible, results. This passes from our vision, but is not lost or destroyed, for by another process we can restore it to its original state. Again, the sun causes evaporation of the waters, they pass and become etheric and a part of the world invisible, but through nature's process of condensation they fall again as rain. By that process the water did not cease to be, but by that change it ceased to be visible. While invisible, its density was changed, its vibration slowed, and it became once more subject to the laws of gravitation. Again, every atom that forms the mass has not only form, but energy, and force, which is life. Life may be so low as to be beyond our appreciation, or its development may be so high as to be equally beyond our comprehension. In the cohesion of the atoms through their affinity and their development, we find the varied expressions of life. Evolution is a constant force, an inherent desire for development, and that great law influences every form of life. It is not confined to the physical, but acts upon the grosser substances, and through it they develop and increase. The universe did not commence with the birth of this planet, its birth was not the commencement of creation. Our dissolution will not end our individuality. There is around and about us a great universal force that we characterize as good. That force is a reality, a substance composed of matter, developed beyond the physical, and in every instance where an atom of that force is clothed with grosser material, nature increases its sum total. We do not have to go beyond the physical universe to see spirit activity. We never see anything else. At the instant of man's conception, an etheric atom becomes clothed. It takes on through nature's process, a flesh garment. The sensitive spirit body, like the seed sown in the soil, commences its development in the dark, where it grows and increases in form and stature. The flesh garment has correspondingly increased, and at such times as it becomes able to withstand the light there is a natural birth. The process of growth that commenced at the moment of conception is continuous. It attracts other atoms slow in vibration. It organizes the physical body so that the flesh garment may increase for its uses and purposes. Further, the outer garment wastes from hour to hour, day to day, and week to week, completely changing once in every few years. But the individual having form, feature, and expression does not change except to increase mentally and physically. If the whole universe is composed of matter, man, both spiritual and physical, is not an exception to the universal law. The physical eye cannot see the etheric spirit in the body, nor can it see the spirit out of the body. If the spirit in the earth life is not composed of matter, how would it be possible to hold form, feature, and expression? This is the keynote to understanding, for with a comprehension of that proposition we can appreciate what dissolution is, and we may finally understand that every plane in which we live is a reality, and composed of matter. Within certain vibratory action, matter is physical, tangible, and visible, and subject to the law of gravitation. When vibration is increased beyond that point, we are in the domain of spirit where one is not subject to the laws of gravitation. The line of demarcation, therefore, between the spiritual and the physical is that point where the law of gravitation ceases to have influence. The whole spirit world, as well as the life force that functions in the tangible in this world, is made up of etheric matter, as distinguished from physical matter. When the gross matter is refined to a certain point, it becomes and ever remains ether, but all is matter technically in different modes of motion, or in different states of vibration. This proposition is so new in physics, so beyond the experience of men, that it is difficult to grasp, but it can and will be understood through the research of the physicist who, without fear of the criticisms of our world, calls to his aid those few psychics who have developed the sixth and seventh senses, and are able to see and hear what is said and done in the world beyond this, or who, as I have done, have created a condition where the inhabitants of the place beyond can speak to us voice to voice. Chapter 8. The Record of a Night. Again, a night of experimental work. As I closed the shutters, the stars shone with unusual brilliancy. The atmospheric conditions were perfect, clear, cold, dry, and still. As I shut out the light, seating myself opposite Mrs. French, clouds within the room for a moment seemed to form and roll like smoke from a great fire. Soon they passed away, and non-luminous points of light became apparent and slowly floated. Then there appeared above my head the ribbon or bar of magnetic substance that is always present when the conditions are right for speech with those beyond. Mrs. French, through her psychic sight, saw a great number of people passing and repassing, while chemists manipulated the etheric and physical material into the exact condition for use in speech. While waiting for the work to begin, I recall trying to fix the line of demarcation between the two worlds. In a moment I should hear the voices of those actually living in another plane, and they would hear mine. I should speak to them and they to me. They would see me perfectly, though I could not see them. Sight is about the only quality possessed by spirit people in the conditions prevailing which is denied me. After a moment's reflection I realized the limitation of our sight at all times. Such situations make one think deeply. "Good evening, Mr. Randall." A deep masculine voice broke the stillness. It was not the voice of Mrs. French, nor were her vocal organs of speech used by another. She, being deaf, often failed to hear the voices of spirit people and spoke while others were speaking, such interruption sometimes causing confusion. "We have," the voice of one of the directors of our group continued, "a great work to do tonight, and as atmospheric conditions are unusual, we have gathered a great throng in substantially the same mental attitude, and have brought them here for help. You have done this work so long that you, of course, understand that these people do not as yet know that they have separated from their old physical bodies and are no longer inhabitants of Earth. Won't you talk to them? They are living so much in your plane as yet that you can secure and hold their attention more closely than we can." This was not a new experience. My records show upwards of 700 nights when this particular character of work had been done. As requested, I commenced to talk easily and naturally. I could not see, but Mrs. French could always see spirit people gather about listening, and some would come close watching me intently, while others would discuss among themselves softly so as not to interrupt my talk. They were evidently trying to comprehend the situation. I had long ago learned that those whom we were endeavoring to help must not be startled or frightened, as such shock would break the conditions that enabled them to speak, and therefore on this night I discussed generally the unusual situations presented at this particular meeting, leading slowly up to the great change that had taken place. Had I bluntly told those assembled that they were all dead, the shock would probably have ended the work for the night. I have often known this to occur. It had been my observation that some man among those assembled could take on material that would enable him to talk, and in that manner rivet the attention of all those who listened, and this night was no exception to the rule. "I have," a strong voice remarked, "been deeply impressed with what you have said, but I do not comprehend its import. Death is a subject that I did not like to think about. People generally give the subject little if any attention, and of course enter the next life ignorantly. I am afraid I am no exception to the rule. If I am to infer that such a change has come into my life, I am wholly unprepared." "Tell me," I answered, "what you now observe, for I assume your vision is clear. For some time I have been watching the preparations being made. Substance appearing like bars of light about you and the lady opposite was being worked and woven into place. Then I looked about and saw a great company gathered. One of those who seemed directing affairs asked me to permit material to be precipitated upon me so that I might talk to you. This was done without my understanding the process or import. Tell me the meaning of this procedure, if you please." "I am deeply interested," I said, "in the progress of man, after death so-called, and with the aid of this lady and the group you saw working with us I am able, when conditions are favorable, to have speech with those beyond the earth plane." "I gathered that from your first talk," he answered, "but all is so natural with me that it is hard to believe we are not in the old body, for we are like yet unlike. Those who seem to control the situation have bodies from which radiates light, while my own and those of all who are gathered listening, seem enveloped in something like a mantle of darkness, not that exactly, for we are surrounded by what I should describe as a dark, intangible substance carried by the individual as he moves. If, as you say, all these whom I see except this lady and yourself are living in the world of spirit, why do we differ so much?" "The appearance," I replied, "is the result of a process of refinement. I don't mean in manner or speech, but in soul or spirit development. In the life you now live, the law of attraction holds full dominion, and all those who enter are irresistibly drawn into that mental state or condition that will accord with their own. That is what I am told. You will find, the intellectual, the high-minded, the spiritual, the selfish, the wicked and the immoral, all of them in different groups and in conditions as varying as character. There is no progress from one to another except by a purifying process through labor and suffering until the individual is qualified for advancement. This is a very natural and a very just process, is it not?" "The suggestion is very new," he remarked. "I cannot say that it is not just, but I do say it is novel. I never thought of things in that way. If what you say is true, why has it never been taught before?" "I could answer your question in many ways," I said. "Knowledge is the one thing in the world we have to work for. You can't steal, buy, inherit, or beg it, it must be acquired by effort. Now, as the world generally speaking has never made any genuine effort to obtain knowledge of the conditions prevailing beyond, it is not surprising that men and women don't know." "Again," I added, "the average mentality would not, could not, and will not understand, even if I should relate what is being done and accomplished this minute, but there are some thinkers, and their number is fast increasing, who can and will accept a plain statement of fact when it appeals to their reason." "I am thinking," he said, "as I never did before, and I don't believe I could have comprehended that the death change could be so natural, and so simple. What is beyond I don't, of course, know. I seem to be just waking. I realize that I am a living entity in no way changed. I now see I am no longer like you. While you have been talking, those whom I knew in earth life have come and told me I have made a great change. That is about all I know now." At this moment another spirit speaking said, "You, my friend, have much to learn. Come with me for a little time's reflection. I want you to appreciate that with all your wealth you were a selfish man. The world was not enriched by your journey through it, and this accounts for the gloom that envelops you and all those who come with you. The first task that you must learn to do is to live for and help others, a process which humanizes and broadens the soul, and develops the man. Again the silence as the voice ceased. I had an easy discussion with Mrs. French for a time. Then there was a whisper. Involuntarily I leaned forward, listening intently that no word from out of the unknown land should be lost, and with a slow and measured voice scarcely above a whisper, a woman said, I cannot understand the wisdom of creation. It seems with my limited experience so unnecessary that there should be so much sorrow and suffering in my world as well as in yours. I am told by teachers greatly advanced that humanity, in working out its destiny, having become selfish, has lost sight of the great object of earth life. Dominated too much by greed, mankind has wandered away from the path of purpose. You come in contact with so much unhappiness in your work, for only the unfortunate need the help that you, working with the wonderful groups, can give, that I am permitted to come and speak to you, and to others through you, of the beauty of this land in which we live, to enable you and others to avoid erroneous impressions of all conditions prevailing among us. I came here as an infant before memory recorded events. Like all who live among us, I came up from the mass of life and obtained my individuality through conception and birth. My first recollection is of a home similar to yours, except more beautiful. I was mothered by those denied motherhood while living among you. It was all very sweet and tender, without discord or in harmony of any character, but I was taken while yet a baby to the Earth Mother, and in her arms while she slept, I absorbed the real mother love. If mothers could only know how children long gone cling to them, how happy they would be, and how glad we are when an Earth Mother feels our presence and responds in word or thought. As I grew out to girlhood, I was given teachers who helped my mental growth, similar to what I see in your life, except that we are not taught by rule. The capabilities of each are ascertained, and each is helped and directed along the lines of his adaptability. And so life as it is unfolded grows more wonderful and beautiful each day. But I must visit you from time to time and by coming in touch with physical conditions obtain that experience which was lost in leaving your world so young. Let me impress upon you the charm of our land by saying that I have never yet found a single one who had emerged and come up out of the earth conditions who wanted to go back, inhabit a flesh garment again, and live among you, and this regardless of earth ties. Tell me more of the actualities of your daily life, I asked. You think, she answered, that you have vision, but your eyes have never looked upon life itself. You think you have hearing, but your dull ears have never heard one strain of our divine music. You have taste, but your tongues have never touched the essence. You have smell, and the aroma of roses carried by etheric atoms fills the nostrils. But you cannot appreciate the perfumes of this land of ours. You feel the touch of the coarse covering of living form without having any conception of the delight of touching life itself. In this sphere we have opportunities for education, joys, and happiness unthought of by you in the earthland, but these are only for those who have come out of the gross material condition in which they were born. We live in homes largely in groups where harmony of thought and action is perfect. But we too have as many grades of people as do you, and in our earth condition is found degradation as great as that which you know. Here are found the ignorant, the wicked, the immoral, and the vile. Dissolution does not improve or uplift character, that must come from the germ of good in the heart of every living creature. Tell those who fear the end, the voice said, that what they call death is very wonderful and beautiful, that with us, as with you, though you know it not, love is the one great force in the universe, it is the motor that drives the world and causes action. All things are done in and through it, and because of it. Affinity so-called is the process through which the love force finds expression. But in this connection let me suggest that love is good, and of God, and walks in the path of honor, never into dishonor. It never brought unhappiness, it is never born of lust. It has been a joy and a privilege to speak to you tonight, for if any words of mine can help or make happy or a single soul, that joy is reflected about me, and I am happier for having made others happy. Such is the law of God, and the secret of the world. Good night. What am I to do with such teachings? Shall I, coward-like, fearing the censure of this little world, hide from men what has been given me? Such actual experiences have convinced me that this individual life continues on and on, through the ages. If this be so, no tongue should be tied, voice hushed, or hand fail to write of facts so important to the peace and happiness of the human race. Chapter 9 Atomic Life. In the mentalogical research for the discovery of the life a principle, investigators are going far. Surpassing wonderful is the Carl Zeiss ultramicroscope, which uses only the radiating energy within the portion of the solar spectrum which is beyond the violet. These waves are so rapid they do not affect the retina and are hence invisible, but they do activate silver emulsions on highly sensitive plates. Inconceivable minute life, living atoms, or bodies in motion are photographed on rapidly moving films. The result is beyond imagination. When these long strips of successive radiographs are illuminated by strong electric light, under a powerful projecting lens, uncounted thousands of unknown kinds of living atoms are seen moving with intense activity. De Vries designates these minute particles concealed in living matter, pangens, and says that they are quite another order than chemical molecules, that each must grow and multiply by self-division. These pangens are probably units containing mind, and if so, his opinion gives a mind cast to the universe and all that it includes. I cite these two scientists to show the tendency of the modern investigator, and to illustrate how far beyond the comprehension of man is the life pangen. Those learned investigators living and working beyond the physical plane, having had greater opportunity to carry on research, go far beyond earthly experiences, because they have had a greater opportunity to acquire knowledge of the fundamental principles of nature. And it is from this source that I have gathered the information that forms the basis of this work. It is very difficult at the coming of dawn to say just when the night ends and the day begins. It is impossible to say where one color ends and another begins in the rainbow. It is likewise very difficult to draw the line of demarcation between the physical or tangible, and the etheric or the spiritual. The one is tangible and the other intangible. The one is measured by three dimensions and comprehended by the five senses, the other is demonstrated by clairvoyancy and clairaudiency, the sixth and seventh senses. I deal now with the part the physical atom plays in the economy of nature, leaving the etheric, no less material but higher in its vibratory action and functions, to the discussion of etheric form. We now know that what appears to be solid matter, tangible and dense, which we can see and feel is but an aggregation of physical atoms and molecules slow in vibration, and that within and back of all material is a directive force. One cannot conceive a directive force that does not possess intelligence. Within every atom going to make up the tangible mass is that something called inherent energy or force, which science readily admits, because it is possible to feel and to see the expression of that force. We now go one step further and say that force or energy wherever found, or however expressed, is life, so that we cannot, if we would disassociate energy from life, or force from life, or life from force or energy, simply because they are one and the same thing. Nature abhors stagnation. Life cannot for one moment be absolutely still, its vibration is so high that there is no inactive substance in the world. That is, every substance has more or less movement, which causes continual change of form and expression. The great law that we call evolution, influences every atom in the physical world. It is the parent of progress, it is that something inherent in everything from which springs the desire to increase, reproduce, and reach a higher state of development, and that influence is as strong in the atoms and molecules making up what we erroneously call the inanimate mass, as in the animate mass or the individual. We have no conception of the maximum or minimum of motion or movement. The higher the development of the mass, the more rapid its vibration. The lower the mass development, the lower its vibration, the more dark the substance as shown by the spectrum. It is most difficult to treat a subject so beyond our experience. It is very difficult to explain a condition so far beyond our comprehension, but if we had never interested ourselves in these great unknown forces of nature, we should not have made the wonderful progress already attained. It is easy to demonstrate that there is this something called force in all substance going to make up the tangible mass.